Good morning and happy Midsummer's Day. Brendan O'Carroll says he only became a comedian to make his mother laugh. Maureen O'Carroll was a feisty Labour TD for Dublin North Central in the 50s, and she was the main inspiration behind Mrs Brown's Boys. And while Brendan claims he never had a plan for world domination, it's difficult to turn a corner these days without staring at a billboard for his latest film. So, 5 plays, 4 books, 2 television series later, and an exhibition at the Little Museum of Dublin, what started off as a 5-minute sketch on RTE Radio has made him a multi-millionaire. Not bad for a boy who grew up in poverty on a council estate in North Dublin. Apparently, Brendan has only one picture of his mother. It was taken in a photo booth on the day of his 9th birthday. Maureen was bringing him into Bewley's for his traditional birthday treat of coffee and chocolate eclair. But as he told John Murray, first there was the tricky matter of a visit to the children's court where Brendan faced a charge of shoplifting.
I know she had the power to stop it going to court, but I think she thought the day in court would do me the world of good and would scare the living daylights out of me. So we went to the children's court in Carberry that morning. I'm in me suit, not because it was in court, not because I was the defendant, but it was because it was my birthday. And when we came out of the court, I said, what happened? She said, we'll talk about it later. Come on, it's your birthday. Into town we went. I should have known something was up. We got the Bewleys. She gave me coffee. And along came the tray after she talked to the waitress with all the eclairs. And I ate 8 eclairs. One after the other. And she said, no, keep going. I said, this is amazing. Should have known there was something up. We then went down to Freddie's Funhouse. And we went into the photo booth and we took that string of photographs that you're seeing there now. And I'm trying to make her laugh. And we did have a good laugh. We had a great day. And then when we got home, she said to me, we need to talk. It didn't go well in court. You're going to have to go away. Tomorrow you have to surrender yourself to Pier Street Garda Station. And I was absolutely devastated. So apparently I was to go away for 3 months, but she had me out in 3 weeks.
Where did you go?
Dangan. Memorable day.
And you were just 9?
I was only 9, yeah.
And what was Dangan like?
I was very lucky because when I arrived, they asked me some questions about myself. The Christian Brothers asked me some questions about myself. And they'd asked me, when was the last time I was at Mass? So I said, Tuesday and Monday and then Saturday. Oh, and Sunday, of course. And they went, why are you at Mass so often? But at that time, they were trying to convert the Mass to a secular Mass. And a lot of the priests weren't having it. And they could serve the Mass in Latin. So the brother went, you can serve the Mass in Latin? So I served Mass every morning. I came for the 3 weeks I was there. I was a bit of a golden boy. But I did learn a lesson. I said I will never get caught again. And I never was.
Brendan O'Carroll heard on the John Murray Show on Tuesday. President Michael D. Higgins appointed Sally Mulready to his Council of State in recognition of her tireless campaigning work with the Irish community in London. Sally discovered in adulthood that she was her mother's 4th and last child, all of them born in mother and baby homes. 2 of her brothers died in infancy. One of them, John, was born in 1947, died a year later, but wasn't buried until 1950. His body was used in the interim period, without consent, for medical research in Trinity College. Sally Mulready spoke with Miriam O'Callaghan.
They said to me, first years get arms and legs, second years get arms, legs and torso, and third years get the lot. I said, you mean the heart as well? Yes. And then I asked about the head surgeon who would have supervised all this. The bodies were registered to him at a private address. And I've never really got to the bottom of it. It was almost like a trade. The word fodder comes to mind. They would ring up Trinity College and say, we have bodies for you. No consent, no documents, no anything. And then they'd pick them up when the university was finished and had got the maximum use they could out of these bodies. Now, I cannot imagine that happening to children or families living in Blackrock or, you know, well-to-do families with influence, you know, comfortable Ireland looked the other way when this was going on. And it all stems back to the influence of John Charles McQuaid and Irish society, that it was all right to abandon and discard these women who had children and weren't married. But I find it not in my heart to forgive John Charles McQuaid for the climate and the atmosphere and the whole way in which he permeated the way Irish people thought. 2 years is an awful long time to hold a little baby. When I think of it now, my poor mother, thank God she didn't know.
At the age of 14, Sally was discharged from the institution in Sandymount and was reunited with her mother in London.
She was a wonderful person to live with. She was so kind and so considerate, a very gentle person, very intelligent woman as well, very independent. Always told me she didn't need to be married. She didn't want to wash a man's socks. Every opportunity I got in my life, every chance of advancement, I got in Britain, I got in London. I've been really lucky, I've been really fortunate. And I do feel it all, and I feel it very deeply. But it's not for me. I do feel it for my mum, and I do feel it for all the women who went through that, the women who gave birth and then their children were taken off for adoption. But it was the manner in which those adoptions took place.
Sally Mulready heard on Sunday with Miriam. Well-known fitness guru Pat Henry found out by accident that he was adopted. He decided to track down his birth mother himself because, as he told Sean O'Rourke, he didn't have the temperament to search for her through official channels.
My mother kept me for 6 months and put me up for adoption by putting an ad in the paper. Four people turned up and I was handed over to my parents, and there was nothing legally ever done. So even though I have a birth cert and I have a passport under Pat Henry, I now have one under Patrick Ahern from Palnamook and Clara Han at Lamel. And my birth mother's name was there on the birth cert, but there was no father's name on it. We rang the priest first in the area and he said there was no such family. Then around the guards, and Donald Ryan, he was amazingly helpful. He rang up his father, who owned a pub in the area, and my birth mother's two brothers were having a pint in the pub by accident, and he found out the name that my birth mother had married into in Ireland. So my wife then took up the phone. There's only five names in the phone book, and the first one she phoned, these children came on the phone, and my wife said, could I speak to your granny? And the lady came to the phone, and after half an hour's conversation, my wife said, I think you could be my husband's mother, and she hung up the phone. And then I got my aunt then to call her, because my aunt had met her when the adoption period happened. She admitted that she was, and that she said she didn't want to see me. So I said, I gave her the option. Maybe I was cruel, but I said, if she doesn't want to see me, I'll knock on her door, because I want to find out what's going on. I didn't know any of this, and I was a bit angry over it. Even though I had fantastic parents and I had a good life, I got a lovely wife and two children, everything was going really well.
Eventually it was arranged that Pat would meet his birth mother outside the Abbey Theatre in Dublin.
And I'm walking down Abbey Street and all these people are coming towards me, and I'm wondering, is this her, is that her? And then I see this woman standing there, and we were so alike, it was actually scary. And it was a very cold meeting, and I went on my own. Maybe that was a mistake. My wife probably should have came with me. But I wanted to experience what it was like meeting this person for the first time. So we went to Sherry's for a cup of tea, and she told me that she had a fling with a guy, she said, in 1949. And didn't know who he was. I didn't believe that even in the beginning. And then she said she kept me for 6 months and put an ad in the paper. She stayed in a flat in Rat Mines for 6 months. And my parents called over and I was just handed over. And I asked her, did she ever think about me? And she said, no. And she says, basically, you weren't wanted when you were a baby and you're not wanted now. So that's the contact we want. We don't want any more contact.
How long did that meeting last, Pat?
A half an hour. And she promised then she was going to meet my children and my wife, and I was going to pick her up. And I said to her, look, I'm not going to tell your family. We don't want any involvement, no any interference and any problems. But I just want to find out my history and what my life was like prior to the time I was adopted and where I was and where I came from and so on. So then she decided not to make any contact. And after the Marion Finucane show, I got a call to say that I know who your brothers are and I'm going to tell them who you are. And 6 months later, I got a call from my brother, and we eventually met up, and he couldn't believe the story, and time went on. And then I had a sister, and I had another brother. He didn't tell his mother that he had met me, because he didn't want to bring the subject up. They lived opposite each other. And then when eventually, last year, he told her that he met me, and she just shut down, didn't want to know. And then she died about 3 months ago. And I wasn't invited, obviously, to see her in hospital. And I was in the...
Did you even know that she was in hospital?
No. I went to the funeral, and that was quite strange, because my brother was up on the pulpit talking about his mother and then named all the children. And I was at the back of the church, and that's the only time I felt I wasn't mentioned. I'm part of this family, even though we've never really had a relationship. And I felt it was a bit strange that I wasn't included, and I wasn't asked to the funeral, even to the burial.
Pat Henry heard on the Today Show on Wednesday. Not knowing who you are or where you came from must be deeply painful. Siobhan spoke to Louise Byrne about her illegal adoption and her search for her mother on Morning Ireland.
And I said to her, are you my mother? And she said, yes. Well, I nearly died. Her telling me the truth, I actually couldn't believe it. I spent about 15 years just trying to find someone with no name. Like, I mean, it's just impossible. Like, the amount of times I wasted and the amount of resources and the amount of ears I burnt and the amount of miles I travelled, it was torture at times. I just couldn't give up. I wanted to give up. I'd go to bed thinking about it. I'd wake up thinking about it. I didn't want to be like that. I needed to be doing other things. Nobody else should have to go through that. A nun was assigned to look after me. She was only a novice nun. And I rang her. I found her, and she agreed to meet me. And the first thing she said to me was, "You were supposed to go to America." And I just said, "Well, if I had been in America, there is no way I would have never found out who I was."
Fianna Fáil Senator Avril Power spent time in a mother and baby home in Temple Hill in Dublin before she was given up for adoption. Her name was Roisin back then. But Avril faced many obstacles when trying to get information about her birth mother, and she believes that the government should act now and legislate for the right of adoptees to personal files and records.
Birth registrations were falsified. So there were practices where women having given birth through GPs' practices, through solicitors, through some of the religious agencies like St Patrick's Guilds, those agencies would falsify the birth cert. So they might list the place of birth as being the GP's practice. So there are hundreds of people all registered to the one GP's practice. And the name of the birth parents as actually the adoptive parents. So for people like that, even getting access to their birth cert tells them nothing because it's a complete falsification. So what they need is to have the state bring together all the files on these illegal adoptions that are all over the country. There was a file found about 10 years ago, grandson of a nurse who had been kind of a go-between in these arrangements and had kept her own log of 1,000 babies and their birth mothers, their original name, and then the families that they went to. And I think that was probably the only records that were there in that case to actually match those up. And that was found by her grandson in the attic many years later. But there are files like that all over Ireland, and the government needs to be proactive about seizing those files, bringing them together and giving people access to them so they can re-establish their identity.
Senator Avril Power heard on Morning Ireland. Well, my own mother used to say that there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. And on Tuesday, Health Minister James Riley announced a U-turn on the issue of discretionary medical cards. Over 15,000 people lost their cards over the past 3 years, but there's nothing like a disastrous election result to focus the mind, a point Sean O'Rourke put to Junior Health Minister Alex White yesterday.
Bottom line is this, though, you just wouldn't allow yourself to be seen sitting beside James Riley a few days ago.
That's not true.
Your position, really, by virtue of what happened with this medical card controversy and your own role in it, it's really left you personally and politically weakened and damaged, hasn't it?
Well, that may be your view. It's certainly not mine, and it's certainly not something that people say to me. I think the recent elections were really a perfect storm in terms of issues that faced the government. We had the water issue, we had the justice issues, we had medical cards, certainly. We had property tax, we had cuts in social protection, cuts in education, cuts in health. So, I mean, it literally was a perfect storm. So I think that the extent to which it's caused political damage to the government is clear. I think it has, and to the government parties. But I certainly don't believe that a junior minister in the Department of Health, that any one issue or any issue can be laid at his or her door. That's not the case.
Karen North's daughter, Eve, is 12 and has Down syndrome.
The family like ours were marginally up threshold, and I don't work outside the home. But everything that is an extra cost for us where Eve needs something, it's always a concern. So I just felt so strongly that it was a core moral issue that needed to be addressed in this country. And that's why I kept speaking up.
And what about Eve's condition? She did, I think, was it heart surgery about 2 years ago?
Yeah, Eve would have had a heart condition when she was born. She had open heart surgery 2 years ago. So it definitely made her health an awful lot better going forward. But she would still have all those associated conditions with Down syndrome, like low muscle tone, which means she needs orthotic shoes, which cost €350 a pair, which I didn't get this year, which she badly needs, which I hope now I'll be able to get again in September when she's going back to school. She has a wheelchair, she has bowel medication, she has, you know, ongoing antibiotics, she has eczema. So all those little things that are associated with Down syndrome, we're delighted to get the card back.
Karen North. Well, today is the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. But let's face it, we've been squealing with delight since the arrival of the good weather. 28 degrees in some parts of the country on Wednesday, hotter than Rio. Can you believe it? So it's bathing togs, buckets and spades, barbecues and, of course, school trips to the seaside. Brenda Donoghue headed for Dollymount to report for Mooney with Shea Byrne.
I'm surrounded by the pupils of
Skull Assam!
That's Skull Assam in Raheny. Hi, boys!
Hi!
Oh, my goodness me. Now, it's around 11:30. Sir, what's your name?
Jamie.
Jamie, what would you normally be doing in school right now?
Irish.
Oh, and instead, what are you doing?
It's going to the beach.
Jamie, what do you like about being at the beach?
It's relaxing. I like burying people with sand. Yeah, it's really relaxing.
No, okay, so what's your name?
Zach.
Zach, you have the shades on. What do you like about the beach?
Well, it beats being in school about the lessons and all, and you just get to play football with your friends and have a great time.
You've been brought over to a very elaborate kind of a castle structure. Can you what's your name, first of all?
River.
River?
Yeah.
That's a great name. Tell me about this elaborate structure I'm looking at.
So, it's supposed to be like a tomb castle, and there's like a canyon around it, which we want to put water in it so it looks awesome. And then we're going to like build like walls around it. That's really it.
Great fun?
Yeah, it's really okay. Good.
Anything else you're doing in the sun?
We're playing World Cup. It's all our friends are playing football. Yeah.
And what teams are you supporting in the World Cup?
Oh, I'm supporting Brazil. Japan all the way! Keizuki Honda!
Yay! Ah, yes, the World Cup. Fiona Looney is resident soccer pundit on The John Murray Show.
Obviously, if I had said last week in my incredibly in-depth and knowledgeable analysis of what was to come, the first team to exit will be Spain, we would all have said, come on.
That's
true. You know, a lot of people in this country would be very fond of that Spanish side and the whole Barcelona outfit. And, you know, they're a beautiful side, an ageing side. But there is something really romantic about the World Cup when those kind of upsets happen, you know. And I think it's kind of, I suppose the other interesting thing, you know, about that was everyone, myself included, said the Northern European teams are the ones that will struggle because of the conditions. Mm. And here we are, and the two probably most impressive teams we've seen, Holland and Germany.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, it's like, it's great the way it's throwing up all these.
We may have to rip up the prediction book. And it's great, of course, for Chile last night. And
Chile were great. A lot of reading in Chile. Have you spotted this? Probably the most tattooed team we have there. I mean, I just couldn't watch the game because I was just too distracted trying
to
read.
One fella,
there was a lot of reading.
Was it his name? I was wondering, was it a surname he had on his arm?
A lot of Roman numerals and Latin. They look like gladiators and, you know, tattooed necks and faces.
Everywhere,
and,
everywhere. Is there a player at the World Cup who doesn't have a tattoo, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
It is a World Cup of a lot of reading, a lot of kind of wearing dark glasses because of the boots, obviously, these neon boots. And in the likes of Balotelli and others who have this deal with Puma where they're wearing the odd boots.
Odd boots,
Which I thought was an accident. I thought that was just kind of dressing room stupidity and
nerves,
footballers.
Pre-match nerves.
Yeah, and footballers maybe not having a huge amount going on between their ears.
Yeah.
But it is actually a thing. You buy them like that. It's Puma or kind of
I wonder if it's a good thing or a bad thing for parents.
Could be a very good thing, Wear that size 5 Converse and that size 2 Adidas. Balotelli does it, you'd be fine.
Exactly.
Fiona Looney. Well, there was a huge shock on Thursday night when England were beaten 2-1 by Uruguay. Luis Suarez scored both goals, either side of a Wayne Rooney equaliser. The result leaves England with little hope of reaching the last 16. Well, I tuned into Des Cahill on yesterday's Morning Ireland.
You and I were chatting earlier about the greatest contrast you could ever hear in a commentary. This is how the Uruguayans heard the goal, and the quiet bit in the middle, that's when England scored.
Pacavani va a tirar para Suárez, está gol, 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 sí, gol, gol. Pum pum pum, pum pum pum, pistolero.
Johnson se mete al área, hay que cruzarla, altata, pero gol de Inglaterra. Gol de Inglaterra, Rooney. Gol de Inglaterra.
Para Suárez, pelota para Suárez, tiene el segundo. Está en el área, viene. Gol.
Well, Uruguay were definitely hungry for victory, but where did it all go wrong for England?
Interestingly, the main headline on the English edition of the Sun newspaper is confusing. It has "We're through" as a big headline, but when you look closely, they have a photograph of Wayne Rooney's child, Kai, in the crowd crying, and they have written in small print up on top, "Don't cry, Kai. If Italy beat Costa Rica today, then Suarez and Cole lose to Italy, and Daddy scores a couple or maybe more against Costa Rica, We're through. So that's
the dream scenario.
But that is the dream scenario.
He's still crying with that explanation.
Well, probably.
Well, Kai wasn't the only one crying. It was a tragic result for English fans, and John Murray rang one of them, Chris McCallum. He used to be an actor on EastEnders, but now he lives in Bray, County Wicklow.
Chris McCallum, good morning.
You couldn't wait, could you?
No.
You couldn't? How long's the show been on air?
I bet
you wanted to ring me last night. Yes. I had the phone off the hook. I thought he'll be straight on. But no, you couldn't wait.
No, you're dead right. Actually, to be honest, dead honest, I was sad, actually, to see England lose.
You've got that little look on, haven't you? That sort of half-smiley thing with your head to one side.
I was. Anyway, it was. Yeah. So when Suarez's first goal went in and then Rooney equalised, obviously, with about 10, 15 minutes to go, you suddenly thought, this is it, did you?
Well, it was like that thing in Casualty, you know, where the person's lying on the slab and there's that flat line just going beep, and in came Dr. Rooney with his paddles, rubbing them together, and he's clear, everybody stand clear, and they put the, and then they go, pjung, and there's a heartbeat, and everybody thinks he's going to be okay. He's going to, look. And then in comes Dr. Suarez with that scalpel and that weird kind of lopsided grin of his. And you know the news isn't good.
No.
And it was a bit like that.
You make it sound so wonderful.
It is quite dramatic with England, isn't it? It's always all good or all bad. And last night there was a moment when obviously they were going to win the game and go on and win the World Cup. And suddenly it all went the way we suspected it might from the start.
The dream is over. Well, it looks as if it's nearly over anyway.
It's nearly over. There's a film called Clockwise with John Cleese. And he says, I can take the despair. It's the hope I can't stand.
Chris McCallum with John Murray yesterday. Well, last Monday was, of course, Bloomsday, but Brian Lally wasn't celebrating James Joyce. He was up close to the stage at Bob Dylan's concert in Cork, 30 years since he attended his first Dylan concert. Brian is the ultimate fan, and he spoke with Shea Byrne.
There's a huge knowledge of the warp and weft of every American music. I mean, I've been to Dylan shows where you get jazz, you get blues, you get hard rock and roll, you get gospel, you get folk. I saw him one time in the Botanic Gardens in Belfast, and he stood up with the acoustic guitar when he could play guitar because he's got arthritis now and stuff. But he started off and he said, if I can remember the intro, he said, I'm going to do a song now that comes from around these parts. Somebody told me it was from around here, so I'm going to do it. It's a long time since I sang it. And he proceeded to sing the Newry Highwayman, which starts up in Newry Town where I was bred and born, in Stephen's Green, now I lie forlorn. I mean, it's a song about an Irish folk song about a villain. And the chances are he got that back in 1960 from Liam Clancy.
Of course, and that's something that's probably particularly well known about Dylan is that he was involved with the Clancys. Yeah, the Clancys were involved with him.
And
swapping songs and teaching each other how to play.
Critically,
actually,
they swapped melodies as well, because if you listen to the Parting Glass melody turns up on Bob Dylan with God on Our Side. If you listen to Brennan on the Moor melody turns up in Dylan's Ramblin' Gamblin' Willie. So, I mean, it's all part of the kind of great continuum, you know.
Brian Lally with Shea Byrne. Well, Paul Noonan is the lead singer with Bell X1, but for his latest project, he's teamed up with some of Ireland's finest, Lisa Hannigan, Maria Doyle Kennedy, Kathy Davey and Gemma Hayes. And the music was sublime last Sunday night in concert here on RTE Radio 1. Here's Paul Noonan with Gemma Hayes and one of my favourite Dylan songs, Oh Sister.
Oh sister, when I come to lie in your arms, you should not treat me as a stranger. Our father would not like the way that you act, and you must realize the danger. Oh, sister, am I not a brother to you? Am I deserving of affection? And is our purpose not the same on this earth? To love and follow His direction. Together. to the grave. We died and were reborn and then mysteriously saved. Oh, sister, when I come to knock on your door, don't turn away, you'll create sorrow. Time is an ocean ends at the shore. You may not see me tomorrow.
From last Sunday's In Concert series, produced by Aidan Butler. Nothing tastes like summer more than homemade lemonade, and Mary-Louise O'Donnell was glugging away on the stuff along with Sean O'Rourke on The Today Show. She'd just been to the Kiltearnan Country Market, which celebrates 50 years. A great outing for all ages. Just make sure you bring your wicker basket and sharpen your elbows.
I just loved it because when you went into this long cabin where it was local, fresh, homemade, made the night before or that morning, oh, the smells and the shapes and the sight and the lettuces and the brown breads and the coffee cakes and the drizzle cakes, walnut jam sponges, you could bounce on the jam sponges, and creamy clairs and the cream coming down the side, and pear and almond, and
I
biscuit
put on 2 pounds since you started.
And paradise squares, and beautiful lemon icing on the top of buns with the little hundreds and thousands and the Smarties, and the lemonade and the chutneys, and the apple jelly. Ever have apple jelly jam? I'll be covering it like a duvet on bread for the next 2 weeks. And eggs and chickens and their own stuffing and the flower arrangements of foxgloves and sweet pea and sweet William, all the flowers of the Corpus Christi procession and of your youth and when you were young, before we got all these enormous flowers from abroad, all the flowers you'd see in natural gardens. And you're in the midst of this, the best of company, the best of selling, because their big thing is their customers. Treat your customers well. And you know, it's interesting, people came in of all ages with lovely baskets. I didn't really see plastic bags, you know, brown bags and baskets and nice shopping bags in to buy good produce, because somewhere in us we've over supermarketed. And there's nothing wrong with supermarkets and they're wonderful too, but if you go to Kiltearnan, completely authentic fresh home produce.
Mary-Louise O'Donnell on Monday's Today Show. But the heatwave threw up some health and safety issues. Sinead rang Joe on the live line.
Dublin people in the capital anyway often wonder what's in the water. And according to Sinead Hamill, who lives out there between Stillorgan and Sandyford, where there is a Dublin city reservoir, you say there's naked, drunken youth swimming in the water.
That's right, Joe. Yeah, I mean, I back onto one side of the reservoir and it's an annual problem now. Once any bit of sunlight comes out at all, they're out. And the other night, I counted 30, mainly lads now. There's only a few girls involved and they're running around the place. Most of them don't bother with the swimming trunks. And in and out of the water for hours. Now, it starts in the middle of the day and then it'll, you know, some of them will head off and then they'll come back. Now, last night they were there from about 7:30 and they were still there 9:45 when I went out. I was football training and they were still there. And there's, like today now, a friend of mine was out running with her dog in the morning and she passed by loads of broken bottles and cans. So, like, they're drinking up there.
But hang on, it's a reservoir.
It's a reservoir,
you
yeah.
say... They're swimming naked and they're drinking. Where not to put too fine a point on it, where are they peeing?
Oh, where do you think? I mean, you know, you're going to be paying for your water next year and you'll be getting a little added extra in your water, I'd say, because, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. I know, obviously, it's purified, but I certainly don't want to be paying for water when I've seen what goes on it up here. It's a joke.
From Liveline on Thursday. Well, it was altogether more civilised when Áine Lawler took to the water with boatman Jimmy Murray and the porpoises on the far side of Dawkey Island.
Look, Jimmy, it's magic. The sun, the water sparkling, the boats, the island.
You'll see, we go around the island and you'll probably see the goats and you'll see some hares and that. And we might come across some porpoises just around Cliney Bay, okay. So we'll head around that way.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
amazing.
Oh, there he is.
You seen him now in a couple of minutes. Did you see them?
Yes.
Where did you spot them there?
Just there.
Oh, yeah, just off to the left. Should we head over towards them? That's them there, yeah. They're right beside us now.
Oh, God, Jimmy, this is better than fungi, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. There, Dad, just...
Look. How do you know that's not a dolphin?
Oh, it's small. We know by the colour. They're small porpoise. Dolphins are, three times bigger than that. Huge.
They've turned around. They're going away now.
Well, here they are.
Oh, my God, he's right beside us.
Yeah, there's one here. Look at right beside us there. He's just gone under the boat. Here we are. Look at this fella. Look at those two of them.
You can see the silvery underside. Yeah.
But see, this is what children enjoy when they see animals like this in the sea. Big children, adults
children
who want to
like
be children.
Me.
Yeah, adults who want to be children for the day. And if you're adults, you can come out and be a child.
I was just thinking, it's like going to visit Santa when you were a kid or something.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
Exactly.
Áine Lawler and Jimmy Murray out on the bay last Sunday. Well, the owners of the historic and beautiful Lissadell House in County Sligo hope to stage outdoor concerts later this year. Constance Cassidy and Eddie Walsh reopened the former home of Constance Markovich to the public yesterday and plan to roll out many imaginative projects from tea rooms to tours of the glorious walled gardens. Well, you may remember the house has been closed for a few years after a fractious legal battle with Sligo County Council over public rights of way through the estate. Gavin Jennings spoke with the couple on Monday's Morning Ireland.
Constance, a 3-year, €10 million battle with Sligo County Council, losing in the High Court, as Eddie said, winning in the Supreme Court last November. What effect did it have on you and the family?
It had a dreadful effect on Eddie, particularly, because Eddie's an extremely positive person. He was quite devastated. So my job, since the High Court decision, was to work hard to keep Eddie focused on being the positive person that he always has been. And it's been really very hard as a family. The children have been brilliant.
What's your relationship now with Sligo County Council?
Mr. Hayes, Kieran Hayes, actually made contact with me yesterday to personally welcome the relaunch of Lissadell and to commit himself and the County Council to make a positive contribution towards Lissadell.
Eddie, have you spoken to Joe Leonard since, the Fine Gael councillor who proposed the original motion which led to the legal action?
I haven't, unfortunately, in that in the 7 years I was in Lissadell working away each and every weekend there throughout the summer months. Councillor Leonard never came to say hello or otherwise, whatever his problem was. But if Councillor Leonard would like to, or he's no longer Councillor Leonard, but if Joe Leonard wants to come along on Friday, I will personally welcome him.
What would you say to those worried, including groups like Mountaineering Ireland, who say that the court's decision sets an unreasonably high burden of proof on anyone asserting a right of way anywhere in the country?
Well, the law is the law. That's what I'd say, first of all. The second thing I would say is that Lissadell is a house. It's a little different from a mountain. And groups will always do far better by dealing with matters in a fair, reasonable, courteous manner. And sometimes I find it ironic that the very people who talk about rights away might have a heart attack if somebody went wandering through their back garden. But there you go.
Eddie Walsh and Constance Cassidy with Gavin Jennings on Monday. Well, you may remember following the findings of the Morris Tribunal into complaints concerning some Gardaí in Donegal, the then Justice Minister Michael McDougall set up the independent Garda Inspectorate. And on Tuesday, Sean O'Rourke spoke with Robert Olson, Chief Inspector of that statutory body. They discussed the culture within the force, whistleblowers, and the practical problems facing them, including the patrol car fleet.
You also did some fairly plain speaking about the whole issue of patrol cars.
Oh, yes, we have. We've made several recommendations in the past about that, certainly.
How would you assess or describe or characterise the Garda fleet at the moment?
Well, it's a financial time bomb just ticking away. The guards are doing a great job getting jobs done in spite of some of the resources they don't have. But the vehicle fleet, they've been shuffling them around, which is a smart move from urban to rural to get more mileage out of them. But all that means is they're all going to crash at the same time. And there's going to be a big bill to pay.
You also did a report into the penalty points situation and the abuse of them. Again, when you went into that, when you delved into that, what was your overall sense?
Well, the overall sense was that it was an antiquated, untransparent system that wasn't being managed very well. Even as antiquated as it wasn't being managed or audited, and it needed to be changed, centralized. I think the recommendations in there clearly speak for themselves.
Robert Olson. On yesterday's Today Show, Sean O'Rourke's guest was Ger Colleran. Ger is retiring from his job as editor of the Star newspaper, and I reckon the two of them must have had a feed of red meat before going live on air.
What about the question then of, it comes up repeatedly, I suppose, the invasion of privacy? One can think of, for instance, I think you yourself got into a bit of a tangle with a former Minister for Justice, Michael McDougall, reporting on something that happened to one of his kids. Then there was the bigger story, which caused the Star to lose its editor, the one who succeeded you and preceded you, Michael O'Kane, because of publication of pictures of Kate Middleton when she was on holidays, topless photographs, rather grainy, I gather, taken from some distance.
I'll tell you. Yeah.
There are two separate issues. Well, deal with the Kate Middleton one first.
The issue of privacy seems to be a fetish of the middle classes. But, I mean, I could argue about privacy all right and keep it going all day, and I'll give a ring now to Father Reynolds. And maybe RTE might explain about the invasion of his privacy.
That was something that and cost maybe, this station very yes, dearly, cost did. People so in the station. They were made accountable and suitable recompense was made
course.
And huge lessons were learned and practices okay. put in place so, to make sure so that that never happens again. It should never have happened.
I should talk to you then about RTE's invasion of privacy on several occasions. Like, oh yeah, that's that Monica Leach issue.
Again, that was something. Was I mean, Jerry, you're into the ground running in a serious way.
You're talking about privacy
in the context of live radio.
Let's make it proportionate.
Let's talk about
the invasion of privacy in relation to Kate Middleton. It was driven completely out of proportion, and I rather like the attitude at the time of Pat Rabbit when he said that the reaction was disproportionate.
Right. Now let's just get back to the facts, then, as Bill Clinton might say. Were you a party to the decision to publish those pictures, and did you take responsibility for it?
No. Hold on a second about those pictures. Those pictures got reaction from a particular shareholder, and it led to the loss of one of the best journalists and the best editor that I worked with. And of course, signs on that he hasn't been out of work long.
And we're delighted to have him back working as an editor on Morning Ireland. A very fine journalist, comes from a great stable. But to come back to the question, were you a party to the decision to publish those pictures, and did you take responsibility?
No, I'm not getting into that, Sean.
You're basically saying you don't want to answer that question.
Yes, I'm not answering that question.
Why?
I'm not getting into it because I don't wish to.
Bare knuckle fighting on the radio beats dancing on the radio, hands down. Ger Colleran with Sean O'Rourke yesterday. Gavin Glynn is a four-year-old from Greystones in County Wicklow. He's suffering from a rare tumour, and following 3 years of treatment and surgery, he's been given months to live. But there is a chance if he gets groundbreaking treatment only available in Houston and Texas. Brenda Donoghue spoke with Gavin's parents, John and Jane Glynn.
Jane and John, this isn't the nicest question to ask, but I suppose I kind of have to. Have you thought about the fact that he may not make it?
No, he's not. He is going to make it. He had his little induction day in school last week for starting in junior infants. He met his new teacher. I picture him in his little school uniform starting school in September with his brother and sister holding his hand going in. And that's just going to happen.
I'm trying to.
We're all in tears. He's going around in a scooter.
Are you singing from Frozen?
All right, okay.
Okay. John, he's amazing.
Yeah, he is. He is superhuman. That's why we call him Super Gaff. Like, everything that he's been through, you see him, like, he smiles, he laughs, he's energetic, he's a beautiful-looking kid. You know, he's just... Everyone that he meets, he touches, because he's just full of life and full of love. Mm. You know, he is absolutely full of love.
You need the help to fight for him.
Yes, we basically... Right now, we're going on Monday. We need...
He's great crack. Go on.
We need the help of everyone in Ireland and abroad, everywhere now. We really need your help just to donate money and help us get Gavin this treatment that he needs. Just to get a couple of euro together from everyone. You're not going to notice it. A cup of tea, a muffin. Just go it out for one time. Log on to the website. Have a look at the video, Gavin. You can see for yourself. If everyone could see him in person, how much of a beautiful, strong boy he is, they would understand why we are fighting for our boy to survive.
Hey, Gavin, I'm going to have to go. But good luck on the big aeroplane. Have great fun and give us an out hug and a kiss, will you? Oh.
Brenda Donoghue reporting. And you can get more information on that campaign on www.teamgavinglynn.ie. Journalist Mary Kenny has been caring for her husband Richard for several years now, ever since he suffered a series of strokes which left him severely disabled. Mary herself is in her 70s now, and like many carers, she finds the day-to-day experience backbreaking.
It's not really the physical so much, it's the fact that the choices have gone out of your life, really, or that you're no longer free to do the things that you want to do. Or it's like having a child all over again. It's about babysitting. It's It's about getting somebody there to make sure that, that everything is all right while you do something. And the actual autonomy in your life, which is something which, you know, coming from the generation of women's liberation, where autonomy, freedom, independence, these were real catchphrases for us. It really does terribly bring you down to earth.
You did have an arrangement whereby Richard was in a residential care home for some time, and then you reversed out of that.
Well, I had a bronchial condition, and the local authority came and did an assessment and said that he should go into a care home. It was very well run, and I used to bring him home at weekends and so on, but he wasn't. Care homes, they can be very good, but they are kind of lonely, really, and there's very little intellectual stimulus of any kind in most care homes. And so we moved house so that we could have a house which was better adapted for him to be there. You know, I suppose I feel guilty then when I say that it's a frustrating life for me in some ways, because it's not a barrel of laughs for him either. I mean, being old and basically very crippled is really hard, you know. It's a difficult road to go through, and it does open your imagination to the sufferings that people go through.
Mary Kenny. Well, the shenanigans surrounding the formation of the Oireachtas Banking Inquiry reminded me of Lanigan's Ball, with all that stepping out and stepping in again. Independent TD Stephen Donnelly dropped a bombshell on Sunday when he announced that he was quitting the inquiry before it even started, following the government's move to retain a majority on the committee. Well, the committee finally met on Thursday, and it was one of the topics discussed on the gathering yesterday with Dennis Staunton, deputy editor of the Irish Times.
A lot of spin, I suppose, as well, Dennis Staunton, about the banking inquiry, but it has finally got underway in the sense that we know the identity of the nine who became 11, and they had their first meeting yesterday. I'm not aware that there were any walkouts or anything like that. So finally and belatedly, is it starting to work?
I think it could start to work. I mean, I think one of the things which has to be said about this banking inquiry is that the report that comes at the end of it is probably going to be the least interesting part of it. The value of an inquiry like this is almost entirely in the hearings. If the hearings are good, if they get the right people, if they ask the right questions and if they get answers out of them, then I think this can be a very, very effective procedure. It appears that much of the commentary is still focusing very much on the political element of the events that led to the bank guarantee. And of course, it is very important for us to find out what went on in terms of getting the bank guarantee and how that was all agreed. And the politics is important. But just as important is to actually look at what the banks were doing to get themselves into the position where they were looking for a guarantee, and to what extent public policy created the wrong incentives in terms of lending, which led to reckless lending. And so I think it's very important that while the politicians should quiz other politicians, that if it's a banking inquiry, it really ought to inquire into how banking was run.
Dennis Staunton, deputy editor of the Irish Times, heard on the Today Show yesterday. Well, I hope he'll stay tuned for Richard Curran. He'll be here with the business just after the 10 o'clock news. But I'll leave you now with a song from Rick Epping, Kathy Jordan and Shamie O'Dowd. They played live on a special edition of The South Wind Blows with Philip King from Doolin in the County Clare. The song is called Who Broke the Lock on the Hen House Door?
I was down in the hen house on my knees. I thought I heard old Bruno sneeze. It was nothing but the rooster saying his prayers, thanking the Lord for the hens upstairs. Now, who broke the lock? I don't know. Who broke the lock on the hen house door? I'll find out before I go. Who broke the lock on the hen? Said the barnyard hen to the rooster out west, you're the one that I love best. Said the barnyard rooster, you're telling a lie, I caught you flirting with a big Shanghai. Now, who broke the lock? I don't know. Who broke the lock on the hen house door? I'll find out before I go. Who broke the lock on the hen house door? We'll be right back. You ain't laid an egg since Lord knows when. Said the barnyard hen to the barnyard rooster.
You don't come around as often as you used to. Who broke the lock?
I don't know.
Who broke the lock on the hen house door? I'll find out before I go. Who broke the lock on the hen house door?
Now who broke the lock?
I don't know.
Who broke the lock on the hen house door? I'll find out before I go. Who broke the lock on the hen house door?